Our reading for today is a poem by Mary Oliver entitled Praying. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be a weed in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together. Don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but a doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak.
Well, I have a bit of a confession to make that I'm a little bit ashamed to admit. This week, I got back from the Philippines last week, Saturday, and I was behind because I had missed a week of classes. I had a midterm due on Tuesday. I had to write this sermon. I had to get ready for the worship service. My husband and my daughter were gone on a trip to Italy with the high school band, so I was kind of lonely. Add to that, I was jet-lagged. You would think that considering all those things that I would turn to my spiritual practice as a source of refreshment, as a way to center myself. And guess what? It took me 5 days. I got home on Saturday. I think it was 5 days before I actually returned to my usual practice. I know, you would think as a minister I would be living and breathing this stuff, that I would be in silent prayer and meditation every chance I get. But the truth of the matter is, I'm just human, like everyone else. Last week, Roger challenged us at the end of his sermon and asked us to think about the use of spiritual practices. He asked if participating in a regular spiritual practice was worth the time and the struggle and the commitment. I think most of us here know the benefits and good reasoning behind having a healthy spiritual practice, and we would tend to agree that it is worth it when I do have my act together and when I am committed to my practice. I can tell that there's a huge difference in my life. I have a different attitude. I have the ability to be more calm and accepting of life's ups and downs. I can determine more readily my intentions. In fact, scientific studies at the University of Wisconsin have found that meditation and prayer not only reduce stress and anxiety, but they also improve the body's immune system. Sitting meditations and mindful walking are particularly helpful with stress and depression-based illnesses. It's proven that when people repeat a phrase from a sacred scripture, like the one we just did with B, or we're guided through a meditation, like Dottie guided us through our call to gather, that these things can stop the effects of a dispersed state of mind, and positive physical changes can take place. Changes that are contrary to the everyday stress in our lives. Research programs have demonstrated the beneficial natures of the changes in our body brought about by meditative practices, and they have shown that they can have effects on such things as high blood pressure and irregular heartbeat, chronic pain and insomnia. And it's a funny thing. I know all of this, and yet for some reason I continue to struggle on and off with a regular commitment to my spiritual practice. It seems I go in fits and starts with my own practice. Sometimes I do really well, and I find myself going easily into my practice for days, months, on end, and then something sort of changes up in my life, like returning from this trip and being really behind, and it seems I get a bit lost, that my spiritual practice gets put on hold until I can get it all back together again. So I was putting this sermon together, and I began to think that the real question here is not if a spiritual practice is worth the effort. The real question is, do I believe that I am worth the effort? You see, I'm a mom and a wife and a daughter of a woman who's in the early stages of Alzheimer's, and I'm also in seminary, and I drive to Minneapolis once a week. I'm doing this internship, and all of that seems to come first, and I put myself in the back of the line. behind all those demands and those roles that take up my time and my energy. I suspect that many of you have some of those same issues. So we can beat ourselves up, and we can make ourselves feel terrible for what we've left undone and by what we've failed to do. But instead, ultimately, I think it might be more useful for us to first be kind to ourselves. It's important to find a practice that truly feeds and entices us into a healthy practice instead of forcing yourself into something you think you should do. Not all meditative practices fit. Early in the fall, I met with the coming-of-age kids, and I asked them to share with me things that they did that kind of made them feel connected to something larger than themselves. I asked them to think about activities that, when they were doing them, time sort of disappeared. It was surprising how many of them mentioned being out in nature, or playing or listening to music that touched their souls, or writing poetry, or journaling. There are many spiritual practices that we can partake of. Rumi reminds us that there are many ways to kneel and kiss the ground. It's important to explore a variety of practices to find out what works best for you. In talking with one of our youth this week, he confessed that sitting in silence and in meditation drove him to distraction. He found a lot more comfort and peace in the ability to connect to himself when he was in motion. In fact, he found pacing to be quite comforting for him. He said it allowed him to clear his head and to connect into his inner self. So when I asked him how that spiritual practice affected him in his daily life, he said it kept him from having a knee-jerk response to the events and to others around him. A regular spiritual practice gives us the ability to pause. And that pause lets us look at a number of ways in which we might respond or not. The pause allows for the brain to disengage from the emotion of the event and see the event for what it simply is, a fleeting phenomenon. So it's useful for you to find a practice that works for you, one that fits your life, that resonates with you, and that feeds your inner being. I think it's important to be mindful of the fact that our spiritual practices may need to sift and change as we change in our life. As we experience new awakenings, as our lifestyles change, as we're aging. We're all unique individuals, and realistically, our practices should be just as unique. Did you know that you're all participating in a spiritual practice right now? According to the Bible, we are called to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. And for good reason, it's a spiritual practice. By choosing to come here each week, you are a part of this community, and you are choosing to participate in an hour of reflection and worship with yourself and others. I suspect that you wouldn't keep coming back if you were not fed or enriched by your experiences here. And we as ministers are mindful of the sacredness of this place. It informs and instructs us as we put together services and programming. So I can't speak for you and what other practices you might find meaningful in your life, but I would like to share with you some of the practices that I do when I do put myself first in line, when I do remember my commitment to myself and my importance to the connection to the universe. I'm a journaler. I've been journaling since middle school. I use it in a variety of ways, sometimes to review how the day went, how I acted or reacted. I partner my journaling with readings of sacred texts or reflective readings. Often, it records gratitude and the blessings that I feel so strongly in my life. And sometimes my journal is my venting place. It's where I let out all my anger and frustration and I scream at the world. It's also one of the few places that I will allow myself to look at my weaknesses. I can hold all of those up in my journal and really look at them with a good examination. And then often my journaling turns to prayer. Now, I don't pray to get things. I don't think that I'm going to have something handed to me. But when I do pray, I'm putting voice to my concerns and to my desires. I don't expect answers, but I use it as an opportunity to connect to something bigger than myself. Like the poem Dottie read from Mary Oliver, prayer is not a contest, but a doorway. My prayers allow me the opportunity to toss things out into the universe and see how they stick on the wall. Prayer allows me a doorway into becoming a part of what Thich Nhat Hanh calls the collective consciousness. He believes that when we're in community together, when we direct our loving kindness and compassion to one another, that energy can create healing and compassion. And for me, when I say the word healing, I don't always mean cure. Sometimes it may mean just the acceptance of what is. When we have our sharing of joys and concerns here, I think we are stepping into that collective consciousness of this fellowship and sending our positive energy and concern towards one another. I have to confess, I find a lot of comfort and sometimes even a good laugh when I look at my old journals. It gives me a chance to sort of reflect and see what really occurred in my life. Sometimes it lets me see what actually transpired and how much I had control and did not have control of the situation. It lets me see the doorways that I stepped through. The work of prayer is neither to inflate or deflate the world or ourselves, but to restore our connection to the powerful currents of each other and to life. And when we're connected to that collective consciousness, we can experience every moment as prayer, if we open our hearts and minds to see it. And if we focus, we can step into those moments quite often. These moments call for mindfulness, for us to be fully present in the moment. But our challenge lies in the fact that our culture does all it can to distract us. Rebecca Parker tells us that we suffer from spiritual numbness created by our assistant culture. We're losing our capacity to feel and to think about what's really going on in our lives. We're becoming anesthetized by the media and all the noise. I had a class this past fall that required us to look at different spiritual practices and to actually participate in them. And then we were supposed to write sort of a paper about, at the end of each week, how it went for us. And one week, we were asked to fast. Well, I don't know about you, but food is very dear in my life. And I understand that I don't always use it properly. Sometimes I eat for comfort. Sometimes I eat when I'm bored. Sometimes I eat when I'm lonely. To consider food or lack of food as a part of my spiritual practice seemed a little bit too much for me. But my professor offered some other ideas of things that we could fast from. He suggested fasting from media, from computers, TVs, telephones, iPods. That seemed like something I could consider. And as I drove to school that week, I decided that I wasn't going to have music on. I wasn't going to listen to NPR like I normally do. Instead, I was going to sit in silence without media interrupting my thoughts. It was delightful. It was so restful that after about 2 hours, I felt as relaxed as if I had just had a massage. My mind focused on the beauty around me as I drove through the countryside, and I found myself being totally present in the moment. My mind and my body were in the same place at the same time. Right mindfulness is the energy that helps us to bring our mind back to our body so that we can be authentically present in the here and now. Thich Nhat Hanh says, if we're present in this way, we can be in touch with what is wonderful in life, inside and around us. And when I'm able to be fully present, life is wonderful. So 4 hours later, as I neared Minneapolis, I figured I had fasted from media long enough. And I turned on the radio station to listen to some music I enjoyed. But I noticed after about 15 minutes, my body was changing. I found myself feeling tense and less relaxed. I turned the noise off, and I admit that I have driven in silence to and from Minneapolis ever since. It's become part of my spiritual practice to use that time to turn off the noise and chatter in my life, but instead to sit quietly and simply be present As I drive along, I stop and look at familiar farms and see how they've changed. I'm noticing how the seasons are changing. I notice birds flying up in the air and the geese returning. It's really peaceful, and it connects me into my body, and it connects me into the moment. Another practice I enjoy is the physical movement of a walking meditation, and I have a lovely walk that takes me down by the river. I try hard not to let my mind wander away thinking about all the things I should be doing, but instead I try to be present in that moment. And down by the river, I'm always reminded about the changing of seasons. In fact, just yesterday I was down there and the river was really rushing. Sometimes I see ice flowing. In the summer, the algae starts to bloom. I live in an older neighborhood, and I love to listen to the old trees. They're enormous, and the leaves, as they come in, start to whisper, and the wind blows the large branches, so they're groaning against the big old trunks. On these walks, I feel my connection to everything around me, that I am part of the energy of nature, and I'm part of creation. I like checking how the flowers are growing, or the buds are coming in on the branches. Just yesterday, I saw the geese back on the shoreline, and I know that babies will be soon to follow. Near the end of my walk, if I have time, I like to sit on a swinging bench at Lux Park for a bit. I swing back and forth with my eyes closed, trying to listen to the birds, trying to identify just how many I hear. Sometimes I hear a fish jump and splash in the river. Cars buzz softly over the Memorial Street Bridge. And I feel like I'm in the middle of creation. Life is buzzing all around me, and I'm connected to it. Allowing myself to reconnect to the universe and ultimately return to myself opens up my own ability to move with greater gentleness and more compassion throughout my day. Like the studies at the University of Wisconsin have shown, I'm sure my blood pressure is lower. My heart rate is slower. And ultimately, I am healthier. How can we not be better people when we are physically and mentally connected into that cultural collective consciousness? How can we not treat each other and the world with more respect and compassion when we see and feel our own connection? As Unitarian Universalists, we believe in living with intention and building a better world. Participating in a regular spiritual practice gives us the opportunity to connect to ourselves into that collective consciousness and really walk our talk. The spiritual practice allows us to feel our connection to that interconnected web of life deeply within our beings, and we're reminded of our responsibility and our relationship to it as we move throughout our day. When I'm consistent with my own spiritual practice, I find I'm living my faith with greater intention. And when I live my faith with greater intention and compassion, I'm drawn to my spiritual practice. One feeds the other. One nourishes the other. So why did it take me so long to connect to my spiritual practice in this last week when I really could have used it? Well, if I'm honest, the truth comes back to asking myself, what is it that I value? Do I value myself? Do I value my place in the cosmos? Do I value my inner being? These are the very questions we seem to keep coming back to as we've been looking at these big question sermons in this past year. We keep coming back to the question of, who are we? And how do we see ourselves in this world? A spiritual practice helps us to keep asking that question and defining and redefining ourselves and our place in our community and our place in this cosmos. It helps us to return to that connection. It returns us to ourselves. It returns us to who we are and who we have the capability to be in this world. It gives us the courage and the intention to walk our talk as we move through each moment. Is it difficult? You bet it is. Will we always be consistent? Probably not. But when we are, I find that it gives us the ability to pause and see our connection to one another and to all creation. May it be so.